Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, September the 5th, 2009. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today I am honored to bring Tika, author of the books Baby Love, Piper, Zuri and Friends, and she also wrote a novel, to be with us today to discuss her books and some of the lessons that she has learned along the way as a professional writer about the book business. So first, welcome to Off the Shelf, Tika.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
You're our first official guest after we resumed taping. We're going into our 6th year. We took a 1 year hiatus. So glad to kick the restart of the guest interview portion of the show off with you, Tika. As we begin, I want to ask you just to start. Listeners find this interesting, and so do I. What inspired you to begin to write?
I would say probably my grandmother. She introduced me to words at a very early age. She used to read the newspaper to me with me sitting in her lap. She would read the newspaper, and she would read it out loud, and she would teach me words. And once I started learning language and words and my alphabet, I started formulating my own sentences that I would make up, and they just kind of developed into stories and eventually also poetry.
Oh, okay. Which is what you, I think, started with. I know, remember, I was going back through your books, and I do have all of your books and have enjoyed them all. On February the 14th, Valentine's Day, 5 years ago, 2004, you autographed a copy of your first book, your book of poetry, Piper, to me, and you wrote, "Living the verb of love." What do you mean when you say that?
I mean, you have to show love, and you have to exude love when you're interacting with people. A lot of people, you know, may exchange words of love to each other, whether it's family members or, you know, male-female relationship, things like that, but sometimes people don't act on those words, and that's all I was saying. Act on what you say. Show people what you mean.
That I think that's very, very good advice. A lot of times we think about the person that we love, but we don't tell them, and then like you said, sometimes we just say it, but then we stop there, but go all the way with it. Mm-hmm. So that's good advice. Your poem, Talk to Me, Talk Yourself Into Me. I was going through some of your work last night, and I looked through Piper and read Zuri and Friends, and I had already read Baby Love in your novel. But I was looking through Piper to find a poem to address to our listeners here on Off the Shelf this morning during today's interview. And Talk Yourself Into Me begins, "Be someone you must talk yourself into. Then talk yourself into a lifetime of love and happiness with me. Wish for sunny days and winter fireplaces with me beside you. My smile in your eyes, my breath in your nostrils. Talk of the moments that mean more to you with me there. Talk yourself into more of them. Talk yourself into being for me no matter what, being the one person in the world I can trust no matter what. Talk yourself into extending your heart without reservation." And the poem goes on for our listeners. And again, it's in Tika's book, Piper, Love Poems and Prose, which she published in 2001. At least that's the date of the copyright. But I wanted to ask you, is this poem, Talk Yourself Into Me, which I so enjoy, I love that, Talk Yourself Into Me, is it based on real-life experiences that you had at the time that you wrote the poem?
Yeah, that particular one is, but the compilation of poems in the book itself come from different sources. Like, some of them are actually my fictional characters talking, but this particular one is based on real-life experience that I was having at the time in a relationship where someone was a little bit reluctant. Like, I was getting mixed signals,
and it
was just my way of saying, you know, have faith.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. It's always interesting to hear where the author or the artist comes from when they create their material. Certainly the reader with their own life experiences may draw another perspective out of the writing, which is also good. Next, I wanted to ask you, what can each of us do, Tika, to make sure, because you've written your poem, your Piper, a book of poems about love and romance, what can we each do? It's easy to have a romance at the start of the relationship. That's almost like a given. But what can we do to make sure that that romance in our relationships remains rich and strong and alive as the relationship deepens and advances?
Well, I would say whatever you did to forge the relationship, don't stop doing those things. I think a lot of times people get comfortable and become selfish. You know, they're in a place in a relationship where they're content and they feel like there's no need to do any work. But it's constant, to be honest with you. I mean, mm-hmm. if you want it to be long-lasting and you want it to feel just as breathtaking as it did when the relationship was new, I think you just have to keep doing those things, whatever it is that you were doing. If you were the type of person to light candles and make romantic dinners, don't stop doing those things. If you enjoy taking walks and holding hands, you know, still find time to do those things. I mean, they're simple things, but they matter, and they make the person you're with feel special all the time. I don't think it's something that anyone ever takes for granted when someone extends love to them through action.
Yeah, I think that what happens is many times is we set our sights to get the person. We work hard to do that.
Right.
And once we do that, it's like reaching a goal. We say, okay, I'm done.
Right.
And that's not the case. If you do the work to get the person into your life, and
right.
then you have to do the work to keep them there. And I think that's right. the part that sometimes we forget.
And then also I think that too many relationships are based on lust.
Mm.
And once the lust fizzles out and you have to deal with the person themselves, like inside, you know, their insides,
mm-hmm.
you may not necessarily have that connection there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm.
you have to, I think you have to bridge the lust with friendship and some other forms of admiration that you have for the person in order for it to last and to be and to continue to be meaningful.
Okay. Who are some of your, just to go in next, and then I, you know what, actually before I ask you that, I think of our listeners who are tuning in. Just one more question on that. A lot of people hear a lot about the lust and the romance and real. For our listeners, how can they tell if it is just lust or if there's really something meaty there, something of worth there to have that relationship with that person? How can they tell that?
I can only tell you how it was for me. You might lust after somebody that looks really nice, very attractive, and have a conversation with them, and there's no connection in the conversation, but you're still attracted to that person for other reasons, usually physical reasons.
Okay.
I think when you like where the person is coming from in terms of conversation, that you admire the person for what their station is in life, their livelihood, whatever they're doing to make a living, maybe they might be into communities. There are different things that turn me on about a person, a man in particular. And I like somebody with a very high intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's just as attractive as a person's looks. But that high intellect is going to keep the connection there for me. I think the looks, you kind of like get over that after a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next question, poets, because as we move into poetry, I do want to cover all of your books and then also let our listeners know where they can get your books. But who are some of your favorite poets, and what is it about their work, Tika, that you most admire?
I have to tell you that my favorite is Gil Scott Heron.
Okay.
I just think he's prolific, he's phenomenal, he's insightful, he encompasses everything that I've ever wanted to be as a poet in terms
wow.
of, in terms of how he delivers his feelings.
Is it his community? He seems to talk a lot about community. Is that what you like most about?
I like his soul. When I read his poetry, I can feel his soul.
Okay.
And when I write my own poetry, I'm pouring out a lot of times, unless like I said before, you know, I'm writing from a character, one of my fictional characters.
Mm-hmm.
But I pretty much pour out my soul.
Yeah.
People connect with that.
Yes, I think when artists do create from their soul, whichever form of art they are creating, I think that is what causes people to, and people are stumped. They don't know why. Do I want to read this person's work or listen to their music or watch them perform? A lot of times it is because they're creating from their soul, and that makes it easy for other people to connect with that and also to appreciate their work more. Do you plan, because you only wrote one Piper, and I was sure when I read Piper that you would come out with other books of poetry, but do you plan on writing another book of poetry, whether it's about romance or another genre similar to how you wrote Piper?
Yeah. It all depends on where my pen takes me. Like right now, I'm in a children's mode. I want to write a lot of stuff for children because that's where I am right now. But I haven't, I'm going to say yes sometime in the future. Yes, more poetry, more novels, more short stories. I'm a writer, period.
Mm-hmm.
But I write by inspiration, and right now my inspiration is children.
Okay. I was just getting ready to lead to that. You started with Piper, which is a book of poetry, and it's available online for our listeners.
At Amazon.com,
and I think at Cush City as well.
Still be at Cush City,
okay.
But I've been directing most of my traffic to Amazon.com
because
it's just easier. You get it in a day or so, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Piper is available, Book of Love Poems and Prose by Tika, T-I-K-A. At Amazon.com. I know your next book, so you started with poetry. Your next book was a novel that told the story of a woman who was abused, and she was outraged, understandably, and she was set on revenge. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about this novel and what happens to some of the main characters in the book?
Sure. But I think you're mistaken. I think my next book was my children's book, right?
Baby Love, I thought, came after your novel, but it may have come before.
You know what? I could be mistaken. In any event, it's about a woman whose emotional health begins to, Forever Autumn, it's about a woman whose emotional health begins to spiral downward after she gets laid off from a 12-year career in the field of environmental science. And memories of past disappointments resurface, and she seeks the help of a psychotherapist to reconcile her past and help her look forward to a brighter future. But there's, a lot of challenges from her past that had caused her to distrust people, especially men. Then one day she meets or she reconnects with a childhood friend who eventually, along with her therapy, helps to restore her faith and love and trust. It's a book about hurt, healing, and forgiveness. It's also an empowering story for women, and it ends with a beautiful love story. There's a lot of women's issues spelled out in the book, but I think men will enjoy this book also because it emphasizes the message to them about how women want to be treated, how we want to be loved and cared for and all that stuff.
And I think it also, the men, there's a diverse personalities types of men in the story, some who obviously have hurt this woman and may hurt women. And then there's men who are positive and who are loving and caring and thoughtful in the story. So it's not, it's a balanced that way. And I think that's a good thing about the book, Forever Autumn.
And that's the message to women who have been hurt, that the message is that not all men are going to be monsters or are monsters. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some redeeming qualities in a number of men, and it comes through in this story.
Yeah, and she had to learn to trust, and the road there for her was a long, hard road, as sometimes it is, because she had been hurt very deeply. So I think...
Several times.
Yeah, readers who experience something like that, they can, you know, I think the good thing about Forever Autumn is that it is authentic. You feel her pain and her anger and what she's struggling with.
Again, she's pouring out her soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do that intentionally because I put myself in her place. And
okay.
if it were me, I think I would just pour out my soul, and that's what I did. I had to put myself in her place, and it was difficult at times. I mean, I found myself crying, you know, as though I had experienced those things that she had.
Wow.
But I had not. It
uh-huh.
was just the connection, riding through her or being channeled, so to speak.
Right.
You know, that just kind of put me in a place that I actually felt as though I was her.
Right, and that's good, that you're connecting with the character deeply, so you can develop her, so readers can connect with her. That being said, and I know I've asked you this before, but it's almost like there's so much struggle at the early parts of the story until she meets this wonderful man, and she continues to do her work with the therapist and whatnot, and different things surface to her memory, but. I always wanted a sequel of her life with this gentleman.
You did?
A sequel to it where their life, you know, them starting a family or their life together. Are there any plans, and I'm asked this about the stories that I write as well, but are there any plans to write a sequel to Forever Autumn?
No. And lots of people have been asking me that, and I am flattered. I feel like I definitely did a good job, the
mm-hmm.
fact that people are asking me for a sequel. But, no, I don't really have any plan of doing one.
Okay. Okay. It does end on a very happy note for our listeners, Forever Autumn does. But some people may be wanting to know, okay, now I want to read about the woman and the man's life together after she has, you know, healed from the trauma she experienced earlier in her life. But that's a good way to close the story, to leave your readers wanting, I think.
Yeah, I think I ended it on a high note, and I kind of don't want to, I like it the way it is.
Yeah, that's a good thing. It's a good way to leave them on a high note. What was the leap like? Because so far, and again to our listeners, Tika's written poetry, an adult full-length novel, and she's writing children's stories now. So what was the leap like, that first shift, going from writing poetry to writing a full-length novel? Because that's quite a shift, I would imagine.
But I've always done both. Poetry is just easier for me. It just flows more easily. I've been writing stories since maybe first, second grade.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, as I said, my grandmother really introduced me to learning to read, and really, very early on, I remember making up stories. Excuse me. And once I had the knowledge and education to put those stories in my head into words, I did. And really and truly, it was very early on. My first story, I remember, was called The Cat and the Mouse. And it was a simple story about a cat chasing a mouse. But I wrote it. And I was like a really little kid. I'm not even sure if I was in first grade yet, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
So your grandmother starts reading to you, and then from that, so it wasn't reading books. It was really your grandmother. That's amazing. That then
yeah, it was her introducing me to words just by reading the newspaper to me.
Wow.
And
then you just started writing from there.
Mm-hmm. Once I learned the alphabet, you know, once you go through pre-K or whatever and you learn the alphabet
mm-hmm.
and how to write the alphabet and things, once I was able to form the words on paper, I would take the stories in my head and try to write them on paper. Eventually I got it.
This is something that a lot of people have asked me, and I'm not sure if you've been asked this often, but I want to ask it again for our listeners, some who might be hoping to start to write, and everybody doesn't find what they want to do when they're young. Some people are still searching when they're adults, what do I want to do? But do you think writers are born? Do you think it's something that has to start for a person young, or do you think writers can be made, that somebody can just say, you know what, I'm 56 and I want to start writing novels, and they can become a great novelist? So do you think it's something that's more inborn?
I think it can be both. I think for me, it might have just been conditioning, or maybe it was inborn. I don't know. And the conditioning would be my grandmother reading the newspaper to me. I don't really know. I was fascinated by words at a very early age. It could have been inborn. My mother is a great lover of reading. All of the women in my family are great lovers of reading, seriously. So maybe it's in my genes. I don't know.
Okay. Or a combination.
But certainly anyone who has an interest in writing can learn to write, I believe. I believe that anybody can learn to write. Whether they can write well, that remains to be seen. But I think anybody can learn a technique of writing.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. They might not be as passionate about it, especially as they start to work with the business side of it. But I do think that anybody can. I agree with you, learn to write.
It's the same with music. You know, I believe that anybody can learn a musical instrument,
you know,
on the technical side of it.
Right.
Whether or not they're going to be good, who knows.
Yeah, and I think that's a good parallel. Yeah. That's a good example. Where can our listeners hear it off the shelf? You said get a copy of your novel and poetry. I want to repeat that throughout the show. At Amazon.com, could they reach out to you directly to get a copy of your work?
They could. I mean, the easiest venue is Amazon.com. Usually people come to me when they want, like, wholesale copies of the book.
Okay.
You know, they can come to me directly, and my email address is tls@nvbb.net.
Okay, if they want to get a copy or they want to get a bulk order for an organization,
wholesale.
They can reach out to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, again, that's Amazon.com, and Tika's also online on the Internet. You are truly a multi-talented writer. I've read both of your children's books and your novel, again, and your poetry. Really, really moving books. Your latest, when I first read Baby Love, when I first even saw it, I said, oh, my goodness.
I remember you telling me.
And then Zuri and Friends, oh, my God. Oh, just very professionally done. I'm reading it like, wow, it's hard to believe that I even know Tika. This is so well done. Do you see the evolution, you know, these shifts? I know you said you see yourself as a writer, not tied to one type of writing, but do you see this evolution of yourself as a writer? And do you plan to focus on, and earlier it sounds like you answered this question, that you plan to focus on creating children's stories for now, and you kind of follow, I guess, what inspires you to say, oh, okay, I'm going to write another novel, and not that you actually plan it out like you're planning out meetings for a day.
Yeah. Do you hear the story? Denise?
Yes.
Do you hear Dorson?
Do I hear what?
A Dorson in the phone line.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, there is on my end, but as long as you can hear me, I'll keep talking.
Okay.
As I said, I follow the direction of my pen. And right now, I'm just really in the groove of writing for children. I do a lot of volunteer work with
mm-hmm.
children. And I love going into the elementary school system and reading my stories to them. And the reaction I get is just awe-inspiring for me to continue.
And that is absolutely wonderful. I'm going to touch on that a little bit later in the show when we talk about the business side of writing and what writers can do to get their books in front of children if they write children's books, and educators, and just parents and general audience overall. But if you could just tell us briefly what your first children's book, Baby Love, is about.
Well, Baby Love is a Christian bedtime story that talks about where babies come from. And basically, I'm letting children know that they come from heaven because we're all created by God.
Mm-hmm.
And it was inspired by a friend of mine who was pregnant at the time, she wanted me to write a poem for the occasion. And I write poems about men and women. And I couldn't really think of anything fitting for her impending birth. So, but what did come to mind was this story. And, you know, I drafted it out of my mind, and once I wrote it out on paper, it was a really nice story, and that's kind of how that happened.
I love the cover of this little girl on the cover of the book. Parents would, one thing about the, because I read Zuri and Friends again last night, and I said, Baby Love, I really enjoyed it myself and bought copies for my nieces, but it's something that adults and children could enjoy. I just read the from Baby Love. It starts, once upon a time, deep in the belly of heaven, played a little spirit girl named Zuri. She laughed and skipped with other spirit children as angels strummed the music above them. Zuri was one of God's most precious spirit treasures. I'm going to save this one for parents. As special as she is, God said. And that's how the story starts, and then it goes on from there. But it's a wonderful story that I, as an adult, enjoyed, and also that children can enjoy and understand. It's written in a very balanced way. I wanted to ask you, how have readers received or responded to Baby Love, and do you find that the people who purchase it tend to be parents, or that the audience for the book is varied and diverse?
I would say parents. Parents buy this book to read to their small children. It's written for the age group of 4 through 8, 7 or 8 maybe. And parents, usually I'm finding that parents who have just had children, like babies, buy this book to eventually read as their babies mature, I guess. But
wow.
It's usually a lot of parents who are new parents that buy Baby Love.
That's fascinating. It must feel good as an author that somebody wants to share your story with their newborn as soon as they're old enough to understand.
It does. It feels great. It feels great. I really appreciate all the support for all of my books, really.
You know how to, and I got to tell you, Baby Love is just, again, it'll make you smile and kind of chuckle when you see it. This little girl on the front with her hands over her eyes. But Zuri and Friends, oh, fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. So what I wanted to ask you next for people who are children's book writers or who are just starting out or who would like to, you really know how to find talented illustrators. So, and I know the cost of finding a good illustrator can be, you know, expensive. So, for our listeners who are thinking about publishing their first children's book, Tika, what advice can you give to help them out, things you've learned that you can offer them on how to find the best illustrator for a good cost value?
Well, talking to other writers who have published picture books for children and finding out who they've used and reaching out to those illustrators and just having conversations with them and finding out what their prices are and things like that. My Baby Love illustrator I found through a friend of mine who's a writer. She does have a children's book, but I found my Baby Love illustrator through a friend of mine out of Wisconsin, and I kind of lucked up on that because it wasn't like I was actively seeking an illustrator through friends. It was just a light conversation that my friend and I were having one day, and I said, you know, I have to start looking for an illustrator, not really expecting her to say, oh, wait a minute, I know somebody. And did. And that's how it happened. I was actually going to go through the phone book or do Google searches illustrators and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it just kind of happened that way, and I'm glad it did because, I really got a good project out of it and then a product out of it. And then my illustrator that I used for Zuri and Friends, Mal Khan, I found him when I was at a book event.
Okay.
He was walking through passing out his business cards and gave me a business card. And it took a few years, but once I was ready, I called him up. And he lives in Maryland. so we did a lot of our communication through phone and mail. Like he would send me sketches and we would go back and forth that way. But that kind of worked out also because the end product, I think, is lovely.
It's absolutely fabulous. And so the illustrator for Zuri and Friends, just, oh, my goodness, very well done, is Mal.
That was Derry Burrows, Derry Burrows out of Wisconsin.
Okay, okay. For Baby Love, and then the other for Zuri and Friends is Mal Cann, which is very, very talented illustrators. And that is a good reason for anyone, whether you're an artist or in business, to network. That is so, relationships are, it's generally how you discover things because none of us knows everything. But when we connect with other people, they know something that we might, they might have the answer to a question that we're actually seeking. So networking, I found, is extremely important. And I want to just take a little bit of time, Tika, to talk about a little bit about the business of writing. But before we get to that, because I do want to discuss each of your books, would you just tell us a little bit about Zuri and Friends?
Oh, I'm so glad that I am so glad you asked. I am so totally excited about this book. I really am. And this book, in terms of like the difference between the reactions I get for Baby Love with the reaction I get for Zuri and Friends,
mm-hmm.
Baby Love was like a parent's book. Parents love this book. They buy this book for their babies, new parents in general. Zuri and Friends, parents, children, teachers, everybody loves and wants this book. The sale of this book is enormous. I am having the best time and the best cash flow, and it's just wonderful. Zuri and Friends is a teaching tool, okay? It's a book about three friends who are trying to get to a playground that's on the other side of a mountain. They can't go around the mountain because of various obstacles. They have to devise a way to get over it. They are met with a number of challenges, and what it does, the story introduces the young reader, again, ages 4 through 8, to setting goals, determination, facing fear. There's an element of fantasy in the story with the mountain talking and the mountain. The mountain is relentless in preventing these children from going over. And, you know, there's a dog involved and tries to pull them up the mountain. And they try all these different things and they fail. And it teaches them about teamwork because they all have to work together. Eventually they do get over it, but it's how they get over it and the trials and challenges that they face, you know, which makes the story for me.
Yeah, and I wanted to tell you, I love the name of the dog in the story, Bruce Leroy.
Bruce Leroy,
I love that name. This was such a cute book. And the mountain, just to read a little about it from it, it says, as they got on their bicycles to ride away, suddenly the ground rumbled and shook, causing them to fall from their bikes. Out of nowhere, a deep voice roared, "You will never get over me, no matter what you try." "Hey, who said that?" Zuri asked, looking around. Oh, I'm scared," Morgan said, trembling. "I said you will never get over me," the voice repeated even louder. Realizing that the mountain was talking, Zuri replied, "Well, we'll just see about that, Mr. Mountain." But it's and then she says, "We'll come back Saturday morning." I thought the mountain, you putting the mountain in his story. I can see your imagination so at work. And then when they tried to get over the mountain's actually laughing at them. I said, "I told you that you would not get over me." So Zuri has a lot of spirit. She's like, "Be quiet, Mr. Mountain. It's not over yet." She's really got a lot of fight in her. But I enjoyed the book, each of the characters' personalities, little Bruce Leroy, and Zuri. She has so much. She has some fire in her, and I like that. She's a courageous little girl, willing to take on, you know, risk and challenges. So that
I thought they were all fabulous. They did not give up, and that's the point in the story. When things get hard, you don't just give up.
Mm-hmm.
You put your mind together and you think of other ways of how you can achieve your goal. That's the whole point of the story.
And that the mountain was just fabulous that you thought to put the mountain in there and then have the mountain speak. And this is, again, another story that adults and children both. I thoroughly enjoyed this story myself, and I'm an adult, so I enjoyed it. Your writing style for children is naturally very effective, and I'm sitting here reading it. Zuri and Friends, Conquer the Mountain. Again, we're interviewing Tika, T-I-K-A, the author of Piper and Forever Autumn, which is a novel, Baby Love, a children's book, and her latest book, Zuri and Friends, just delightful book, Conquer the Mountain. But your writing style for children is very effective, so I'm thinking, wow, Tika seems like just a natural children's writer. But I wanted to ask you, because it's so easy to experience what the characters are feeling and thinking while you're reading a children's book. Did you always know, Tika, and I know you said you followed your pen, but did you always know that writing for children would come so naturally for you? Or maybe it doesn't, and it just the finished product makes it seem so natural. And even more, did you see yourself as a children's book writer when you first started your writing career?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
I did not. And it did come fairly easy, but it's not something that I had ever thought about doing again. It all came about from my friend wanting me to write a poem about her impending birth of her baby girl, and the story just came to mind. And once that story came to mind, after I wrote Baby Love, so many more stories came to mind for children. You know, my niece had a baby shortly after my Baby Love book was published, so I thought of, you know, some kind of story that incorporated my niece's baby. So his name, my niece's baby's name, is actually in Zuri and Friends. He's Ryan, the boy that helped the girls go down.
Okay.
Yeah, I used his name in the book. So, I mean, I'm always thinking about different things for children right now because I'm surrounded by them, and I want them to be excited about reading.
Wow.
I went to a book signing recently, and there were a number of small children, I'm going to say maybe 6, 7, 8 years old, who told me that they didn't like to read.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, you know, how sad is that, you know, that they're that young, and they're just being introduced to reading, and they don't like it. I mean, actually, it told me that they had difficulty reading, or that they're not being supported.
Yeah, or maybe they're only reading in school where they get graded, and if they don't get a good grammar grade or something, it has a negative impression. They might not read for enjoyment a lot.
Oh,
so that might be why. That might be why they kind of turned off to it, because aspect.
Yeah, so I put them in a group and read my Zuri and Friends book to them, and they loved it. They all got involved, and they wanted copies of the book, and you know, and I'm hoping that it changed their mind about reading.
Mm-hmm. Because it's that reading, having strong literacy skills is so incredibly important. Even if you just go into business and you're not an artist, it's just to comprehend and understand.
Don't you think it's kind of odd, though, for a six-year-old to say that they don't like to read when they're just learning to read? I would think that they would want to absorb every word. I mean, when I was 6 years old, I wanted to absorb every word. I wanted to read everything I could get my hands on because words were new to me. Like, wait a minute. So I would think that every child would have that excitement about reading, and apparently not, though.
No, I love to read, but my siblings were not that into it.
Oh,
so I think it depends on each. But when my aunt started reading to us, then they began to enjoy listening to somebody, like the children hearing you read from Zuri and Friends. They didn't really pick up books and read them themselves, but they would enjoy reading, having somebody read to them.
Okay.
But I just love to read. So some people, I think, kind of gravitate toward it, and some people don't.
One of the most exciting things about my childhood was when my mother would take us to a bookstore on weekends, and I mean, just the excitement of knowing we were going shopping for books, oh, my goodness. I was, like, beside myself with excitement. I just so always looked forward to being near books.
and myself, and I think that's absolutely fabulous. It's a good way to build a love for literacy in children. But I want to just ask you, when you create your stories, especially your children's books, they just – they seem so to just so natural to me to come to you. But when you create your stories, do you start with a plot, even your novel Forever Autumn? I know not with the poetry, but more than likely. But do you start with a plot, a setting? Do you really work hard to craft an outline, do your characters? Or do you just simply sit down and start writing and take a blank sheet of screen, and whatever comes to you, that's what you start to work with?
I always start with the title. All of my stories are about the title. Like, the title always comes first to me, and then the story.
Okay.
I don't know why that is, but it is. And then, like, well, with Forever Autumn, I came up with the title, and then I outlined the story and the characters and the ending. Actually, with Forever Autumn, I'll tell you the truth, it was the title and then the ending.
Oh.
Yeah, it was the ending, and then everything else in the story came after I had already written the ending.
Okay, interesting.
But I knew it was the ending. It's not like I started the book and the love story was the beginning of the rest of the book.
Wow.
No, I knew it was the ending.
Okay.
And I had to, like, put stuff on top of it.
Yeah,
to get there.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Your stories have a positive, like, and there also is a sense of overcoming in your stories, like a positive faith-based thing to them. Why do you think it's important to inspire children and adults as an artist through your works?
Because I think people forget that there's something much bigger than what we're going through and who we are, and all we have to do is ask.
Mm-hmm.
and talk to our higher power, and you know, the answers to life will come to us, and the answers to resolving situations will come to us. And through my stories, I want to let people know that it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. You don't have to give in to your current plight. You know what I mean? You
mm-hmm.
don't. There's always a way.
Right.
There's always a way for things to get better.
Regardless of where you are, and I think Forever Autumn depicts that very, very well because of the struggles, the intense and immense struggles that
right.
that the character in that book goes through and then overcomes. Just to talk a little bit about the book industry, because we do have listeners here at Off the Shelf who, again, and I try to keep all the listeners in mind as we do the feature interviews with the artists, but some who are struggling, how can they get started in the book industry? So I like to use people like yourself, Tika, who've found your way in the book industry to help give valuable tips and advice to our listeners who are thinking about starting out or just starting out. So I know you've been in the industry for a couple of years now, and I'm certain that you've learned some valuable lessons along the way. What are some of the most, you had to say, like maybe, I don't know, 3 to 5 or 2 to 3 valuable lessons that you've learned about the book business that you didn't know when you started out? What would you share with a new writer, some lessons that you've learned along the way?
My mind just went blank. I learned to go to as many networking events as possible, and I've learned to expose myself to as many people and places as possible so that people can become familiar with who I am and my work.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, I didn't really want to do so much of that. I thought that the book would sell itself.
Okay.
And I learned that you really have to get on the grind and make yourself known by as many ways as possible, whether that's placing an ad in literary periodicals or going to as many events as possible. Even if you don't sell one book at the event, it may be worth attending the event anyway because of the connections you can make with people who can possibly
mm-hmm.
take you to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So many doors have opened to me from events that I have attended where I didn't sell one book.
I think that is so important. I'm so glad that you you share that. I know as new writers or people who would like to write, and even in business, whatever area of life, a lot of times we imagine, and then even going back to the relationships we were discussing in Piper, we imagine that things are just, we think, oh, this person is the one for me, or I'm a writer, I'm meant to write, or whatever, and it's just going to be so easy. is write this book, and voila, a million people will be knocking at my door. So I think that's a good, very good that you said that. You have to get out here and network, attend events. And I have, as myself, met people who I've had ongoing relationships with and things that have helped me in the book business that I met at a book festival or a cultural festival or another
workshop.
Yeah, or another type of writing event. But I thought it was interesting that you said you at first you didn't think you had to do that, and then you came to learn that you did. So for our listeners who may think all I got to do is write the book, you know, thanks to Tika, you might save yourself a lot of time.
Oh, yeah, true. For me, it's like I spent a lot of money on an ad at a large book website, and I thought that, and this website had told me they got maybe many thousands or hundreds of thousands of traffic to their website, and I was definitely going to get the sales and blah, 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 blah. So I thought, oh, this is going to be a breeze. It didn't happen that way at all,
mm-hmm.
at all. And when it didn't, it was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to do something.
Right.
So I started doing stuff myself. I started going to libraries and giving them my pitch and, you know, getting sales from libraries. I started talking to people who worked in schools, and they got me set up with going to different schools for visits, and the schools started ordering, and I was going to conventions for librarians. I was going to conventions for teachers, and just kind of putting myself out there. I was going to speaking engagements, anything and everything that had to do with books,
mm-hmm.
that had a traffic of people that were in the industry. I went to publishers seminars and all kinds of things. So
that is just so valuable. And I think that it, as far as a business tip, people who are listening here to Off the Shelf who want to become a published author, that's a tip I would definitely encourage you, our listeners, that Tika just was so kind to share. I would definitely encourage you to keep that in mind as you go forward in your writing career. You have to get the exposure. You have to attend events. And I don't think it all can be done over the Internet. Certainly a lot can, but to actually physically get out and meet with people, meet with readers and teachers and book buyers and publishers.
And what happens with that also, all that exposure, is that those people start talking about you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they'll talk about you to somebody that maybe you haven't met, and then the next thing you know, you know, you're at an event, and someone that you haven't met says to you, a friend of mine said she saw you at another event. I recognize your name, and I recognize the names of your books, and she was telling me to look out for you. So I was like, oh, my goodness. The first time that happened to me, I was, like, floored. I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, somebody's talking about me. And then once I went to an event, and a woman saw me and said that a professor of hers at Johns Hopkins University lectured about my book, my
poetry. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Totally amazing.
Yes.
Totally amazing.
Stuff
can happen.
Yes, when you get out there and start networking. Would you recommend that authors, I know you do work with the schools, and I know you do wonderful volunteer work to help children, but would you recommend that authors connect with schools in their area, maybe even schools, you know, across the nation, to speak to students to encourage them to strengthen their literary skills? And also, I think a good byproduct of that helps the author to increase their book sales. Do you recommend that children's book authors do that?
Oh, definitely. Look, go to as many places as you can. Connect with as many people as you can. That's the best way I can put it. You know, don't bypass the school system, because if you get a school system that buys your books, I mean, that's like that can become continuous. You know what I mean?
How do children's book writers, how do they, though, connect with a school? What do they do?
You would call up the school principal, and the school principal would either make those arrangements for a visit or put you in touch with the school liaison who would make arrangements for a visit. And it would be the liaison who would recommend to the principal whether or not the book should be bought for the school.
Okay.
Whether it's for curriculum or for the school library.
All right, so go through the school principal, and then they'll get you connected.
That's
so
right.
So have not
just elementary schools. I mean, people who write adult books. I mean, you can go to the college, the college setting as well. I mean, don't rule anything out.
Yeah,
I mean,
don't limit
everything.
Yourself.
And institutions are good because it's the institutions that are going to buy like hundreds or maybe thousands of your books.
Very good.
Now, the only thing I wanted to add when you were talking before about lessons learned, blah, 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 I've learned not to bribe people to buy my book. When I go to book events where I have a booth or I'm vending or whatever my books, I used to have, like, cookies and candies and giveaway packages and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really didn't make a difference because people would just come over and eat all my cookies and cakes. And If you have a good book and you have a good pitch, you'll sell your book. You don't have to give away cookies and candy and stuff.
No, I agree. But I'm sure people appreciate it. But I agree, they're just going to come by and take whatever you're offering for free and then tell you, oh, I'm going to buy your book later. I don't have the money on me now, and then never do it. But
yeah.
I agree with you. I wanted to ask you, Tico, are you working on any new material as we come down to with about 8 minutes to go, but are you working on any new material? And if so, could you just give us a glimpse of what you're working on and when we can expect to see it on the market?
Well, I am working on a number of things. In terms of my next publishing endeavor, I can't say which one of those things I'm going to rotate through the publishing wheel next, but I just finished two more children's stories.
Wow.
And I'm circulating those through the school system right now just to kind of – I also use the kids in the school system to, like, as a gauge for how good my stories are.
Okay. Very smart.
What I need to tweak, so they're kind of like my test audience.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have two more children's stories that I just finished, and I have a book of short stories that I'm compiling now, and I'm still writing poetry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, Tika, you're busy. So you don't know when the next one's coming out. You just came out with Zuri and Friends.
Yeah, and I think in terms of marketing, I think I want to focus on marketing Zuri and Friends more, like maybe for like another year before I spin that wheel of putting something else out.
Okay. Well, we look forward to what you come out with next. So if you could let us know, and we can let our listeners here at Off the Shelf know what you come out with next. And again, Tika's books, Piper Forever Autumn. Piper is a book of love poems and prose, and then Forever Autumn is a novel. Baby Love and Zuri and Friends, which is Tika's latest book, her new book, Zuri and Friends Conquer the Mountain. They're all available at Amazon.com, and Tika does work with school systems and organizations. You could reach her online for bulk, you know, book orders. You could reach out to her directly. I wanted to ask you, again, as we're closing with just a few minutes left, but if you weren't a writer, Tika, what do you think you'd be doing right now?
What I'm already doing, philanthropy. So that's what I'd be doing.
Okay. I've often heard it said that in order to be a good writer, and you touched on this earlier when you said you didn't understand why young children didn't like to read at 6 and 7, but I've often heard it said, and thinking more like as an adult, to be a good writer, it's important to read, read a lot. Do you agree with this thought that that in order to continue to improve as a writer, it's important that writers continue to read a lot of books that they don't write themselves, that other people write?
Yes, I do. And actually, it's part of my ongoing learning process and becoming a better writer. I have to tell you, early on, though, that was not my conditioning.
Okay.
I didn't like reading novels. I've always been a reader, but I didn't necessarily like reading novels. I liked reading biographies, lots of nonfiction, and lots of how-to books. I was always teaching myself how to do something, whether it was knitting or whatever it was. But lately, and I'm going to say since I started publishing my own work, I've really been including in my study reading books by other authors, particularly classic books.
Okay. I know I read a lot, and it's not something I know. I've heard other writers say they don't like to do that because they don't want to copy somebody. You don't want to unconsciously start writing like another writer. But that has not happened. But it does help you to, when you read, I mean, very, very good writing, I think it helps me anyway to improve my own writing.
I think it actually helps your technique. For me anyway, it helps my technique.
Yes, because you learn different things. You see what other authors do, and a lot of it might even be unconscious to learn different ways how to improve and sharpen your craft. Your children's books, again, are very professionally done. Has this helped you, and I'm sure that it has, but has this helped you for people who sometimes put a book together quickly and it doesn't look so professional, but do you think that's had an impact on your ability to get your books into stores and into schools? It just looks so professionally done.
Oh, thank you. With all of my books, I didn't rush any of them. I'm somewhat of a perfectionist, I've been told. So I take my time along the way of getting what I want in the end. And if it takes months for me to get the right cover, then it takes months. If it takes, you know, I mean, the editing process alone is forever.
Yes.
Because I'm never happy. And, you know, you just have to, like, pay attention to what you're putting out, and you want to put out the best possible work you can, especially when you're doing it yourself.
Do you have, for your children's books, a professional editor? If not, you really are self-editing very well.
No, I have an editor on all of my stuff.
Okay.
And as proficient as I think I am in English and grammar, I never trust myself completely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my biggest investments monetarily is paying for an editor.
And I that's something that I didn't start out doing, but I would encourage to get a reputable, because there are a lot of people out here, say they're literary agents, which is what our first show was on, but I didn't have a guest. I was just speaking to the listeners. But to get a reputable editor, I think that's, because there's no way you can catch everything as the author. Tiki, we only have 2 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you very briefly before we close, and first, thank you so much for being here with us today.
And thank you for inviting me.
It's always
so nice to talk to you.
Oh, and it's always nice to talk. Tiki has a very beautiful spirit to our listeners who haven't met her. But before we close, what last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf?
Keep writing and keep loving.
Okay, keep writing and keep loving. So we want to thank Tika, the author of Piper, a book of prose, poems and prose. She's also a novelist, the author of Forever Autumn, and a children's book writer. Absolutely fabulous books. Baby Love, which is her first children's book, and Zuri and Friends, Conquer the Mountain, which is her new book, and they are available at Amazon.com. I truly encourage you to get her books. I have read all of them, and they are good. So, again, thank you to Tika for her graciousness and her time and her candidness and the advice that she has shared with us. So we appreciate you being here with us. And to our listeners, please go out to Amazon.com and get a copy of Tika's books, T-I-K-A. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to Off the Shelf this week. Please tell your family, friends, colleagues, book lovers everywhere to tune in to us here at Blog Talk Radio. In the coming days, we'll continue to bring feature interviews with established, best-selling, and up-and-coming writers, producers, editors, agents, and others, in the movers and shakers in the industry. Please visit me online at www.chistell.com and get a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which is available at my website and in bookstores and at Amazon.com. And remember that you are so valued, loved, and truly blessed. keep writing and reading great books and loving life. Thank you again for being here with us.
Denise.
Tika,
you there?
Okay, it's over. Oh. The show's off. I didn't want to talk while the last few seconds were winding down.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so because the show is streaming now. So what will happen is once it's up, I'll get the link and I'll email it to you.
Oh, okay. Hey, listen, call me. You have my phone number at home?
Give it to me again.
609-893-6434.
Okay.
Call me because I have a list of things I want to talk to you about.
Okay, I'll call you now or later because you're going
sometime during the week.
Okay,
Are you working every day at your
I am working every day now.
Okay.
I'm temping at Black Rock through the end of January.
Oh, okay.
But I'm also still doing my writing, and I'm also working to workshops with the Spells Writing Center out of Philadelphia. They're new. I can send you their information in case you'd be interested.
Okay.
And with your children's books, it'd probably be wonderful for you. So I'll send that to you now.
Oh, okay.
All right, Tika.
All right, thank you so much.
How do you think
I did?
You did wonderful. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I flubbed a few times, just like the first
time. No, you fabulous. You absolutely fabulous. You got to be kidding.
Oh, thanks.
All right.
I appreciate it. I really do. You have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.